and I can start. So yeah, hi, I'm Tuure, and I'm about to talk about the application of microchips, mainly integrated circuits, but they are kind of related to microprocessors, so some kind of that stuff as well. First, a bit of an overview of the presentation. First, a brief history of the integrated circuits, then about what integrated circuits actually are and how they differ from the more old-fashioned discrete devices. The main focus of this presentation is the fabrication steps in the manufacturing of integrated circuits. And lastly, two different process parts, front end of the line and back end of the line, are explained, and an example of a ready integrated circuit is shown to you. So let's get to the history part. Yeah, the first ever integrated circuit was made on a germanium chip. It contained 5 components, and it was made by Jack Kilby. It actually included only 1 transistor. And in the year 2000, Kilby got a Nobel Prize in physics for his part in the development of the integrated circuit. And first IC that had the wiring integrated on top of the chip was made by Robert Noyce in 1961. This made ICs more suitable for mass production, and it also gave Silicon Valley its name because this IC was made on top of silicon chip. Noyce is known by the nickname the mayor of the Silicon Valley, and he's also a co-founder of Intel, that is one of the largest manufacturers of semiconductor chips today. The first microprocessor that was built completely on a single chip is largely considered to be Intel's 4004 microprocessor. It contained 2300 transistors. It was made for use in a calculator and later was used more widely in other commercial applications as well. And comparing the modern transistor counts to the first transistor, the first integrated circuit in 58 shows us that the count has increased immensely in about 50 years, because in modern ICs, there's around 40 billion transistors. Okay, so what's the difference between discrete devices and integrated circuits? Traditional discrete devices can be made on top of semiconductor wafers, but the difference to integrated circuits is that there's only one device per chip. That's why they don't have such high requirements for fabrication, because size of the component is not an issue. Despite their size, discrete devices are still needed in many otherwise sophisticated systems alongside integrated circuits. However, circuits with discrete devices are easy to modify because the components are physically apart from each other and the wiring is not made on top of the devices. In integrated circuits, all the components are on the same chip, and therefore smaller components mean that there fits more components on the same chip. Making small components requires clean room technology and accurate fabrication methods. These high-intensity circuits and small components have enabled modern IT devices such as cell phones, smartwatches, and computers. But one drawback of integrated circuits is that once they are fabricated, they are very difficult to modify because of the components' closeness to each other and because the wiring is usually made on top of these components. Now let's go through the fabrication steps of the IC structures. So usually the first step is layering, and it's the operation that is used to add thin layers to the wafer surface. These layers can be insulators, semiconductors, or conductors, and the layers are made from different materials and are grown or deposited by a wide range of processes, such as chemical vapor deposition or atomic layer deposition or evaporation, for example. Depending on the process used, the layer that is made can be nearly uniform on the surface, or it can depend, for example, from the angle of deposition of the material, as you can see from the lower picture. If the material is deposited in an angle, it kind of covers the structures a bit differently than if they're just deposited from straight up. The next step, or the next, you know, usable step of this is the patterning, and it results in the removal of selected portions of the added surface layers. This leaves a pattern of the layer on the surface, and the removed material can be in the form of a hole in the layer or just a remainder of the material. The goal here is to create patterns exactly the same as in the circuit design and to locate them in the right place on the surface and in relation to the other parts of the components. Therefore, this is the most crucial step because misshaped or misaligned patterns can cause errors in the functioning of the circuit. Another source of defects in the patterns is contamination during patterning. The contamination's effect on the patterning is magnified because usually different patterning operations are performed 5 to 20 or more times in the circuit fabrication process. So therefore, the effect of the contaminations increase because of the amount of steps. Next step is doping, and it creates electrically active regions in the wafer surface. These regions act as a part of the electric circuit, for example, in transistors. There's two different doping techniques, thermal diffusion and ion implantation. In thermal diffusion, the wafer is heated and exposed to wafers of the dopant material, which then diffuse into the exposed wafer surface. In ion implantation, the wafer surface is bombarded by ions of the dopant material, and the ion's momentum lodges them into the wafer surface, creating this kind of a doped region. Thermal diffusion is a chemical process, and ion implantation is actually a physical process. Now, the last step is heat treatment, and it's practically the simplest fabrication step since it's basically just heating and cooling of the wafer. But this heating and cooling induces wanted changes in the materials, so it's not useless step. Is actually quite important, and although nothing is added or removed to the wafer, contaminants and vapors may evaporate from the wafer surface during heating of the wafer. Heat treatment is used, for example, to evaporate solvents from the photoresist layers. This way the solvents won't interfere with the patterning process. Now let's talk about the few different production line parts. So the first part is the front end of the line, in which the components are made on the wafer surface, and this includes the creation of the actual components such as transistors and diodes and some such parts. The amount of the fabrication steps depends on the design of the components. In this picture, a doped region is fabricated through some fabrication steps. So this just combines the aforementioned fabrication steps in a specific order to produce a wanted structure. First, on the prepared wafer, an oxide layer is grown, and on top of the oxide, a photoresist layer is spinned. And then using a mask, the photoresist is exposed to UV light in order to make the desired pattern in the photoresist layer. Then etching the exposed surfaces creates a hole in the oxide at the parts where there is no photoresist on top of it to protect it. And finally, doping the exposed wafer surface using ion implantation and heat treating the wafer. now on the wafer, there is an area that can be used, for example, for transistor structures. Following the front end of the line production, there's the back end of the line, which is the process part that includes fabrication of the metal wiring that connects the components together. The wiring is made on top of the components, and therefore no extra area on the wafer is needed for the wiring. In order to connect many devices together, multiple layers of metal wiring is needed, and the different layers are connected to each other through vias that allow the current to reach the components. This picture depicts an example of fabricating a few metal wire layers on top of three devices that have been made in the previous front end of the line part. The steps used are somewhat similar, but the order and the masks for the photoresist are obviously in different shapes to create this kind of wire structures. Now this is an example of a ready integrated circuit, which has 12 layers of metal wires and vias and dielectric material that supports them. Only one layer includes the actual functioning components of the circuit, and they are directly in and on surface of the chip. And this component layer is at the bottom of the picture. Clearly, the wire network takes a lot more space than the components themselves, and that is why it is necessary to design circuits so that the amount of wiring needed would be as low as possible. So that's about everything I managed to pull together from this subject, the actual, including of the fabrication steps, usually covered quite well in the microfabrication lectures. And thanks for your attention. If you have any questions, please ask me now.
Thank you. Now it's time for our questions. Julia should be the opening.
Yeah.
So you can start.
Yes. It was a very good presentation. I really don't have any questions, but if you could just remind, how small can you go with this?
The range is about tens of nanometers, I think, in the modern designs.
Okay.
So they're trying to do it like Aku had these single molecule things and such, but they are not exactly yet mass producible. But yeah, they're in the nanometer range, more or less.
Yeah. Is there like any of these changes in the function depending on the size? Or like, how does it change?
I think when you go smaller and smaller, you have to take into account the different, like, quantum mechanical and the, you know, the specific atom interactions or some such that appear when you go smaller and smaller. But I think the transistors in there, like in the nanometer scale, they kind of still function the same as some kind of bigger, more macroscopic transistors.
Okay. Yeah. I don't really have any other questions. I just had a suggestion. If we look at the discrete device versus integrated circuit. I would have maybe put a picture there because I don't know like what they look like.
Yeah, well, the basic, the simplest example of a discrete device is kind of like a resistor that you may have used in some kind of electronics labs.
Okay.
Yeah. With the wires from the both ends and such.
Yeah.
So that's like the most obvious example of a discrete device.
Okay, I see. Yeah, well, I don't have anything else. Thanks.
I do have a question. Did you find anything in the bottom-up fabrication methods for integrated circuits, or did you look more in the top-down?
I didn't look at the bottom-up techniques in this. I think this is mainly the main way to produce these. Today,
yeah, since top-down methods are easily made in bulk, you can just make a pattern and then just print and print and print.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think only bottom-up method nowadays commonly used. This is one we discussed on a lecture. So this atomic layer deposition of this high dielectric constant in dielectric, or this high dielectric constant insulator in the transistor. That is made by atomic layer deposition, which is basically bottom up, but that can be also discussed. Is it really bottom up? Yeah. I think no other method is commonly used. That was a good question. Anything else?
Can I ask one quickly?
Maybe you come here.
I just wondered, did I understand correctly that you can fabricate these like upwards, not just in like 3D modeling it, not just in a flat screen, but you can 3D model some kind of structure in 3D and make a transistor that way. So you can make a bigger transistor in a smaller area, but you use a height instead of the surface area.
Yeah, I think that's true as well. I think the main benefit of this like planar function is that you can like produce a whole wafer full of chips by just replicating the process steps over and over, so you don't have to think about the challenges of the 3D fabrication, since you just go like one step up at a time. But yeah, I think that is a viable option, at least for some simple or smaller devices.
So what would be the major challenge of a 3D processor, so to speak? And I'm not talking about rendering some 3D images, but basically building, like you suggest, like going on top, stacking it on top of each other.
I really can't say about the specific difficulties of the 3D production compared to this.
What about heat? Would that be an issue if you make a 3D processor?
Oh yeah. So you mean like if you make a lot of transistors on top of each other or something like that? So this, if you fabricate these layers like too close to each other, then the heat really gathers in the device and it cannot dissipate. So it kind of heats up the components and it can destroy the whole chip if it heats too much.
Okay, that's awesome. Thanks.
Yeah, so if I remember correctly, this latest design by whatever processor fabrication, they use vertical transistors.
So they go in that direction.
Yeah, so they are going that direction, but you better check it. Don't believe me as such.
Yeah, okay.
Well, that's what I remember. I still assume that they are not making very many layers on top of each other. Just each transistor is just standing up instead of lying down. Yeah. But now we were talking about the stacking. And between the, you make one layer of wires or transistor or whatever, and yeah. then you want to make a next layer. So there's one critical step between. Did you bump to that kind of step, what you need to do?
When you, if you make a new layer of components on top of
the previous metal.
I didn't actually check into that. I think there was some kind of silicon related special step.
Yeah, and this is something we didn't even talk in a lecture either. That's why I came, but wanted to mention it. Okay, but it's this kind of it's called chemical mechanical polishing. So you have to make the layer flat again, because you start from a single crystal silicon, which is flat. And for the lithography and all the steps, they work for flat surface. But then you make some layer, you get some unevenness, bumps. You make next layer, you even add more. So it comes really like a bumpy surface. So that's why you have to after every layer, you have to polish it to flat. But this is just like throwing in some liquid and sand it. But it's a critical step, but simple. Anything else? Yeah. If not, let's thank Tuure again.